Hey there, young sailor. Do I look fat in these pants? A good support network just might tell you the truth. Close friends and family probably won't. All this and much, much more on episode 58 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. How are you doing this week, Jeff?
Well, I was having a good day until a couple minutes ago. I just read a news article, and I was so proud to live in Calgary because we were the first city to ban trans fats in all of our restaurants. And then it turns out, 5 months after we banned them, the health inspectors who checked the restaurants, they went provincial, meaning that they will no longer inspect for the city of Calgary. They just want to do things for the province of Alberta. So they're no longer going to enforce the rule. And it's so disappointing because that was something to be proud about, where you could go around to any restaurant and not have to worry about eating trans fats.
Well, that is disappointing. You know, you got to wonder who they're looking after there.
Well, I guess anything, any level of regulation that you add, it's all about money and who's going to look after it. So.
Well, that is disappointing. But let's get into our Keeping It Real section. We're a little more personal here.
Well, we're going to get really real because I don't know if you've done so great in the last week. How are you doing, Russ?
I don't think any amount of Jedi mind trick is going to get you to not talk about my weight this week. But let's go and do it here. The weigh-in here, I am weighing in at 243 pounds. I think my eating goals, I'm a good 5 out of 10 this week, I'm going to guess. Exercise goals, you know what? I fixed my machine, so I'm a 5 out of 10. I'm going to get back on that thing this week, but I have been doing some walking as well. And my motivation, 10 out of 10 again this week. I'm feeling really good. I had a blood test with the at the doctor recently, and my cholesterol came back at 170, which is extremely good. I'm real happy about that. And my triglycerides were only 81, which is almost half of even the normal range. So really, really happy about that.
Well, that sounds really good that your motivation is good. But when you look at your weight loss in the last 3 weeks, you are exactly the same weight. And I went back a full month to see what your weight was a month ago. And in the last 4 weeks, you have lost 1.3 pounds. So even if your eating goals are only 5 out of 10 and your exercise goals are 5 out of 10, you should have had a little bit more weight loss than that. So what do you think might be holding you back?
Well, I'm not really sure. I'm going to think in the... the not being able to exercise on a regular basis is cutting into that. And also, you know, today I was feeling really cold, and I have been feeling really cold. So I looked up online trying to find, you know, cold hands, cold feet, you know, trying to find some information on that. And I came across slow metabolism. Now, I don't know that I've slowed my metabolism. I did kind of, when I couldn't exercise, lowered my calories a little bit. But it was not, you know, maybe a couple hundred calories. It was not a lot. So I don't think that's particularly the problem. But, you know, I'm going to get back to working out and lifting weights. And hopefully that'll just shoot right off that weight that I haven't been losing in the last month.
Well, hopefully next show we don't have to do a weight loss intervention, because those excuses kind of sound like you're trying to blame other things. But it's kind of like these people that say, no matter what I do, I just can't lose weight. And my response is, well, if you are stranded on a desert island with very little to eat truly for 6 months, you would lose weight no matter what. So I can give you a break for a week or two, but if we hit a month and you're still, you know, less than a pound, we'll say in a month, there's no kind of excuses that I'm going to take as being valid. So just a warning for next show.
All right. I've been so duly warned here. But let's get into our emails and comments. And off of me as a topic, our first email is from Paolo.
And he wrote, "Hey guys, I absolutely love your podcast. I'm always waiting for the next one. And I've listened to every podcast at least twice. It keeps me company in the gym or when I go on long walks. I'm male, 26, 5'9", 175 pounds, with a goal weight of about 160 pounds. I've lost about 8 pounds since the beginning of January, which is a great inspiration from your show, and I started working out with a pretty intense personal trainer about 3 weeks ago to gain some definition. I have about 24% body fat right now, according to my scale. I'm going to start a weight training class next month, too.
My question is, since I'm eating at some calorie deficit, 1,800 to 1,900 on the days I don't work out, 2,200 when I work out, will this stop me from gaining any muscle from all the weight training I'm doing and will do? I'd rather not lose the muscle I am gaining with hard work. Although I appreciate that it is helping me with losing these last 15 pounds.
Well, technically, you can't be in a catabolic and an anabolic state at the exact same time. So that means to lose fat, you must be in a calorie deficit, and to gain muscle, you must be in a slight calorie surplus. All of those full-page ads for supplements that you see in bodybuilding or fitness magazines that claim they will help you lose 20 pounds of fat and gain 10 pounds of muscle in a month, they are just clearly lying.
Yeah, weight training releases hormones that help you hold on to the muscle, which is the most important thing for most people. The least important thing in losing fat is how fast you lose it. The most important thing is that you don't damage your metabolism along the way. Your muscle mass throughout your body is what drives the speed of your metabolism. Don't lose muscle at any cost.
And for the majority of people, there will be no true muscle gain, but the majority of dieters eat way too little. Your calorie levels that you're eating right now are reasonable, and it's a very intelligent thing that you're doing by eating a little bit more on the days that you're working out.
The closer you are to your maintenance level, the higher the probability of gaining muscle while you lose body fat. Many bodybuilders get fat in their bulking stage when they're trying to gain muscle, but it isn't necessary to be eating a ton of extra calories either.
Now, you want to gain some muscle and lose fat at the same time, and it is possible. But to improve the chances of gaining muscle, you must follow the principles that bodybuilders actually do. And that's talking about 6 meals a day and a lean protein with every single meal. The reason for this is that muscle is made up of protein. If you don't eat protein, your body won't be able to build muscle. But here's the real kicker. Protein is only available in your system to build muscle for about 3 hours after you eat it. So if you're looking to gain muscle while dieting or not, you want to have some protein always in your system to be used for muscle repair and growth. If you keep your calories only slightly below and eat like this, you can build some muscle at the same time. But you have to be really careful about what your eating is.
But for most people who think that they have toned their muscles, it is only a reduction in body fat around the muscle that makes the biggest difference. If you're doing regular resistance training, your muscles will stay a little bit pumped up to also add more definition to your muscles. So even if you don't truly gain a lot of muscle while losing some fat, your muscular appearance can make quite a difference, and that is probably what you are looking for. So good luck to you, Paulo.
And our next question comes from Alan from Mexico City. And he had a couple of questions in his email, but we're just going to cover one about martial arts.
All right, Alan wrote, I am a karate practitioner for 8 years, and for personal reasons, I haven't continued for the past 4 years, and I only recently went back to it. Although I am at the same belt level, I don't have the fitness level I should have for that level. Another issue here is that we only have one class per week, barely enough to get back in shape. So I need to compensate otherwise. In your opinion, what would be the best way to catch up to maybe 75 to 80% of the fitness level I'm supposed to be at? Should a martial arts practitioner or any athlete for that matter be eating or training different outside their sport? Meaning that we have the specific training we need to advance in our sport, but when we go to the gym, is a standard workout regimen good enough? What is your recommendation?
We have a couple points that will catch you up quickly to your fitness level. This isn't really just for losing weight. This is how to get in shape quickly. So first of all, work out a progression starting at about 60% of what you can do now and gradually increase the intensity. It should be very easy at the start. You're not only training your cardiovascular system, you also need to get your muscles accustomed to the training.
Yes, and you don't want to injure yourself or overtrain. It seems counterintuitive, but doing too much too soon won't get you there any faster. A person's cardiovascular fitness improves very quickly, but the rest of your body takes more time to catch up. And don't forget to stretch after each workout. This will improve your flexibility, but also help your muscles recover from the training.
And the absolute fastest way to improve cardio is with interval training. And way back in show number 29, we talked about interval training. The simplest way to describe interval training is to do sets of varying intensity, ranging from really easy to moderate, all the way to super, super intense. So let's say you're running. You do a few minutes running, gradually going faster and faster each minute until you're sprinting for the last minute. We'll say 5 minute sets. Then you slow right down and repeat this a few times. There's many different ways you can do intervals. And as I said, go back to number 29 to listen to that show.
Yeah, I have to say that number 29 was a fun show. So definitely if you haven't listened to that one, check it out. But also don't forget about all those other things you do in class that you are now finding hard to do, like those sit-ups and push-ups. Once a week is just not enough. Just simply adding in two or three more workouts per week of those exercises will make a huge difference.
As for the question about martial arts, I trained for a little over 16 years myself, starting at age 10, and I have a black belt in Shorinjuru Kenkokan Karate. So lucky for you, this is truly my strongest area of expertise. Now, when you're asking, should a martial artist or any other athlete eat or train differently than average, that really depends on your goals. If you are the average person who wants to look good in a bathing suit, who is using martial arts or any other sport to help them become more healthy, or are you the person that wants to take your sport to the next level and your fitness level makes you better in your sport, or is it somewhere in the middle of these two? So the more serious and intense you are with a sport, the higher the level of training, specificity, and functional training that you're going to have to do. So that means if you get really serious, you'll look at the movements and skills that you need to do in your sport, and you train only those muscles and supporting muscle structures. So for example, if you're a sprinter, you train by sprinting, and any leg work that you do in the weight room is explosive training. You don't do lots of high reps with low weights. The goal here is muscle strength and power. Now, martial arts will always be a little different, though, because it requires fitness in all the areas of fitness, so it's appropriate to train in a wide variety of ways. It isn't like a long-distance runner who only trains for cardiovascular fitness and leg muscle endurance. You need strength, power, agility, flexibility, endurance, balance, etc. But no matter how serious you are with martial arts, it's very important to have a strong core. These are the muscles that are on the inside of your body to support your posture. If you do weight training at a gym, that is great and will help you out for sure, but you still need to do all of those different types of sit-ups and push-ups and plank holds. And if you really want a good core workout, use one of those stability balls. They are actually really amazing. And another thing, most forms of martial arts have memorized patterns, which are known as forms or katas. Make sure that you're actually doing them on your own and practicing at home. That is truly functional training. You are training and conditioning the muscles that you actually need to do your sport. The more serious you are, the more functional training you're going to end up doing. So if you're getting really serious and you want faster and more powerful kicks, you really need to do things like heavy bag training. If you want to be able to throw 200 powerful jabs in a match without getting tired, you need to be able to do probably 500 jabs on a speed bag without stopping. But in general, becoming a fitter person by doing a wide variety of cardiovascular and strength training will make everyone a better athlete and therefore better in any sport whatsoever that you participate in. The more opportunities that you have to actually do your sport will also help. But at the average and above average levels, becoming a better all-round athlete will help. And if you get really serious, then your training becomes really specific. But for right now, get back in shape, do those suggestions we had at the start, and just do martial arts, kick and punch, and you will get back into shape pretty quick.
Wow, some surprising revelations here. Karate, I did not know that about you. Well, very cool. And if you would like to get your question answered or send us a comment, there are a couple ways to do it. The first way is to leave a comment over on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is by leaving a voicemail over at the website. Click on the Call Me button and leave us a free voicemail.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, well, let's get into our web report with a couple of news items. What do you have this week, Jeff?
This week, I found a great article in the Los Angeles Times, and it was entitled Joy of Cooking or Joy of Obesity, dum dum dum. This article was talking about a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine that examined 18 classic recipes found in 7 different editions of the book The Joy of Cooking, and this ranged from 1936 to 2006. It found that calorie counts for 14 out of the 18 recipes have ballooned by an average of 928 calories, or 44% higher per recipe, and the serving sizes have grown as well. So, for example, they talk about the beef stroganoff. In the 1997 edition, the recipe called for 3 tablespoons of sour cream. The 2006 edition calls for 1 cup. And then there's the waffles. In 1997, the basic recipe made 12 6-inch waffles. In 2006, the same ingredients, 6 waffles. So overall, they found that changes in ingredients and serving sizes led to a 63% increase in calories per serving in 17 of the recipes between 1936 and 2006. So the Joy of Cooking. I have tons of these old Joy of Cooking books that I seem to inherit. I have no idea where they've come from, but I can't believe that if I have a recipe from an older edition, it's going to be a lot healthier than from a newer edition. I think this is really reflective of changes in our society. For the recipes to remain attractive, they've probably had to increase them and made them sweeter and more calories just to keep up with people's tastes. Do you find this surprising, Russ?
No, you know, portion sizes, I mean, are gigantic in every restaurant you go to. And so that's what people expect now. And it's, you know, it's no wonder that this cookbook is going to be giving people what they want, that big, satisfying, heavy fat and carb-laden meal. And that's, again, that's what they expect, and that's what they're giving them.
I just never would have considered, you know, I have, like I said, some old Joy of Cooking cookbooks. I'm thinking, well, should I buy the new one because the recipes will be different? No, I'd probably stick with the old cookbook. But I guess that's just the sign of the times. So what do you have this week, Russ?
I found an article over at sciencedaily.com. And so, Jeff, are you still on the diet soda?
Very rarely, maybe once or twice a week. Nothing like I used to, though.
All right, here's going to be a starting revelation here. I am back on the sauce. I kicked the Diet Coke habit, but you have one and then you go to get another one. And I am nowhere near the 100 ounces a day that I was in the past, but I've had one or two a day for the last month or so. I'm going to try to kick that again, but boy, it's hard to kick. But all right, the article's over at sciencedaily.com, and it's entitled Artificial Sweeteners Linked to Weight Gain. Now, this was a study done by psychologists at Purdue University's Ingestive Behavior Research Center, and they are reporting that rats that eat a yogurt sweetened with glucose, simple sugar, regular, and rats given yogurt sweetened with a zero-calorie saccharin sweetener, the rats that ate the saccharin-laced yogurt gained more weight, put on more body fat, and didn't make up for it by cutting back calories, and so the rats got fatter. They also mentioned here in the article that they checked the core body temperature. It's a physiological assessment, and normally when we or rats prepare to eat, the metabolic engine revs up. However, in the rats that had been trained to respond using saccharin, they broke this link between sweetness and calories relative to the rats that were trained on the glucose yogurt. It showed a smaller rise in core body temperature after eating this novel, sweet-tasting, high-calorie meal. So the authors of the study think that this blunted response that both led to overeating and made it harder to burn off those sweet-tasting calories. Now, again, this data does come from rats, not humans. However, they noted that their findings match these emerging evidence that people who drink more diet drinks are at a higher risk for obesity and metabolic syndrome. So further human study is required, but it's very interesting. And so many of these articles you read, I've read in the past, and over at Fat Guy Radio, I've got a bunch of them on Diet Coke is evil. And yet, you know, I still got back on it. And now again here, as soon as I do, about a month in here, there's another article that's showing me that I should be off the Diet Coke. And so should you.
That's true. I think with humans, there's a lot more psychology as well that goes into play. When you drink a Diet Coke, for example, and you get that sweetness, for me, it kind of makes me crave more sweetness. And maybe I'll eat more of regular food just because I've had something sweet. But if that's having some effect in rats, and we know that humans seem to gain weight when they're drinking a lot of diet soda, I just think it's something you should avoid at all times.
Yep, good advice, and I'll have to take my own advice this time and get off the juice. But that's going to do it for our web report. Let's get into our features section for this week, and we're going to talk about support in weight loss. And this was spurred on by an email from listener Karen.
And she wrote, "Last year, I had formed a support group with friends who have as many pounds or more to lose. I've noticed there have been two reactions when talking about weight loss. First reaction, my friends with as many pounds that I have to lose or fewer, less than 15 pounds, respond with what they've tried in the past or what they're going to do now to lose weight or get fit again. They focus on what needs to happen. And secondly, my friends with more weight than I have to lose or more than 15 pounds respond with the reasons why they cannot lose weight or why they are struggling to eat better and get to the gym. They always have the usual excuses of work and lack of time. Even when the opportunities to go to the gym arise, they still have reasons for not going. It's not an impossible thing going to the gym. It's just easier to not go to the gym. So back to my friends who are in the less than 15-pound group, they also talk about how important it is to feel fit. My friends who are in the greater than 15-pound group always insist that I'm so skinny and that I don't need to lose any weight. Then they talk about how they need to lose some weight, etc., which is proportionally the same end weight as I'm trying to achieve. They just have farther to go. In a way, it appears more as an attempt to protect the status quo of one's overweight by insisting that others with less to lose shouldn't lose more weight. If the skinny friends weigh even less, it makes the fat friend look even more overweight by comparison. If everyone were 15 pounds overweight, then someone who's in the 30 pounds overweight looks only 15 pounds heavier by comparison. At that point, it's all relative. As I've continued to lose weight and get back into shape consistently for the past month, one of my friends has grown more silent as she has continued to gain weight at the same rate of my weight loss. It is sad and frustrating, but I can only hope that she will have her own day of reckoning as I have had and work towards a healthier lifestyle. Again, thanks for the great show, for keeping me motivated.
All right, Karen. So I made a post called Support and Weight Loss that was inspired by my wife buying foods that at the time were irresistible and completely the wrong thing for me to eat. That was in November of 2007 or so. I accused her of sabotaging me by bringing those foods into the house that I loved. Since then, I've lost over 50 pounds now. She's also trying to lose some weight for that same 20-year high school reunion. You could say she's even seen the error of her ways and now supports me in my weight loss endeavors. We become each other's support network. So let's talk about support networks. What is a support network? In general terms, it's a group of individuals with a common goal that come together to talk, share information, vent, and otherwise encourage each other. Sometimes this encouragement can even take on the form of competition to get you back in line with your goals. Of course, here at Fat Fit Radio, the type of support network we're talking about is the diet group. This group could take on many shapes. Locally, it could look like a local Weight Watchers meeting, your local gym, a community center, maybe a group at your church, your neighbors, or just your family members. But now with the internet and online communities, they're just so incredibly popular. Instead of just your local area, support groups span the entire world. And a few of those popular places to find support online could be Yahoo groups, Google groups as well, bulletin boards all over the internet, podcast communities like the one we've built here, social networks like Facebook, Spark People, Trainio, Livestrong.com. Those are all some great support networks. One of the most interesting services also that combines both the local and the online venues is Meetup.com. On Meetup, you can search for a support group meeting in your geographic area, and you do so on the internet. So it combines those two ideas. So just to give you an idea of how popular the online weight loss support industry has become, in November of 2007, when I made that post, I did a search on Google for support in weight loss. At that time, there were 29,800,000 search results. As of today, when searching for that same phrase, support in weight loss, I received 51,300,000 search results. So it's almost doubled in a little over a year. So while it's not impossible to lose weight on your own, if you have some sort of support network in place, it can be more successful and can even be enjoyable. So you probably want to start by taking small steps. Start by charting your weight or the foods you're eating on one of the online services we mentioned. That's totally easy to do and a great way to dip your feet into the weight loss support realm. Then, when you feel more comfortable with the idea of sharing your information, get on a support forum like the one over at fattofitsupport.com. You know, lurk for a while, read posts, give someone an attaboy when they talk about their success on that forum. And finally, when you're ready, ask a question that you've been dying to ask. As you gain more confidence and more knowledge, then you can help someone else new to the online group as well. Now about Karen's friends. While they may not be very supportive of your weight loss efforts and make excuses for themselves, they've given you a clue to what they're looking for. While you may think you have a long way to go, they're looking at you as a success. Perhaps instead of looking for encouragement, it's time to give some encouragement. While it would be ideal that everyone in your support group pat each other on the back and be in line with their ideology, it's those who have the bad attitudes that need the most help. Years of failed diets is enough to make anyone discouraged. That friend that has continued to withdraw more and more should be your first target. I'm sure she's feeling extremely bad and like a failure. Instead of letting her withdraw from you and or your group, seek her out and see what you can do or say to help. When those negative comments disguised as compliments start coming out, turn them around. If she says, "You're so skinny," say, "Thanks, how do you think we can get you kickstarted? If you know she's gaining weight, challenge her. Set goals with her. Ask her to keep you on track as well. As time goes by, you may see a change, and the camaraderie that you hope to have in the group will get there. So also here, recently a friend who's lost almost 60 pounds said something to me that every single one of you listening should do. Regardless of whether you have attained your goal, tell someone the following sentence or something similar. Hey Jeff, if you see me gaining weight, ask me about it. I don't want to undo all the good I've done for myself by losing this weight. It's as simple as that. As you start losing weight and people notice, they will tell you. They'll tell you how great you look or ask you what's changed about you. Anyone and everyone will mention that you've lost weight, but no one on earth will mention to you that you look like you've been gaining weight. It's just too uncomfortable for them. They'll expect a fight or an argument even though they only have the nicest of intentions. They still won't tell you out of fear of offending you. Give that person or multiple people permission to call you on gaining back that weight. You're creating your own support network, a weight monitoring system.
Well, that's some really good advice because you're very true about how people will not tell someone, hey, you look like you're getting a little fat, but they will always say, hey, have you lost some weight? Because there's that total stigma of not wanting to offend other people.
You know, and when this woman told me this, you know, I felt like, you know what? You know, she and I have this bond now. She's going to look after me. And if I gain some weight, she's going to, you know, say, hey, what's going on with you? And even if it's just between one person and one other, you know, person, it's powerful and it can help immensely when you're losing weight.
That's right. Well, there's two benefits to a support network. You have the support, but you also have the accountability, which I think a lot of people, when they start to put a few pounds on, you know, it's, oh my God, I shrunk my pants in the dryer. I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. Or it's, oh, I had a surgery and now haven't lost any weight.
That's right. And I'm feeling cold because California is really cold right now. It must be slowing my metabolism down.
Exactly. So again, that accountability is important as well. But you know, feeling not alone is so important. I mean, all these online social networks, I think that's a big part of them is, you know, you're not alone. There's always somebody out there that's going through exactly the same thing you are or has already gone through it and can give you some advice.
So true. Well, hey, let's move on to the recipe of the week.
All right, this week I've got a doozy here. I love pumpkin. I've had probably, I don't know, I'm going to guess half a dozen or more pumpkin type recipes here on the show. This time I found a cinnamon pumpkin protein muffin. That's right, protein muffin. It's got one scoop of chocolate protein powder in the recipe, and that sounds really good. Pumpkin and chocolate, love that combination. It sounds great. So check out the show notes. There'll be a link to the cinnamon pumpkin protein muffin recipe. So Jeff, what is our homework for this week?
The homework this week is a very specific task. It is simply to find someone who has helped you with your fitness goals and thank them. This person could be immediately obvious to you, or this person may not even realize that they've helped you out. They might have made a comment that you look good in some new clothing, or simply noticed that you've lost some weight. If something like this has helped to motivate you in continuing your fitness goals, they have supported you, even if they were unaware. If you say to someone, thanks for noticing I lost 5 pounds, that has really kept me going to the gym, they will keep supporting you, and it's a win-win situation.
That's very good. Even those little comments make a big, big difference. So good homework. And what's our quote for this week?
Well, I have a special quote this week. It's actually two quotes. The first quote comes from Jimmy Fallon, who's on late night television here. An angry woman called 911 yesterday because McDonald's ran out of chicken McNuggets. That is not cool. When you tie up the lines like that, 911 can't help people who are actually dying from eating chicken McNuggets.
That's a good one.
And now for the actual motivational quote, and this comes from Anthony Robbins. Most people's lives are a direct reflection of the expectations of their peer group. And if you think about this, this goes really nicely with our support group topic.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank everyone for downloading the show, for listening. And, you know, we really need your comments and your questions. So go over to the website and leave a comment, send us an email. And all the show notes are over on that website as well. So while you're leaving us a comment, check out all the show notes over at fattofitradio.com. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.